What do you do when you know? When you know? When you know 100% for a fact that something will happen in the future, but you don't have the power to change it, or to sway it, or to study it early before it happens and figure out what you could do about it? You know something's gonna change. And you know that this change is gonna forever change everything and the way that it works and how it comes together. And you kind of have an idea of something that might save lives. It could create a generation of loyal customers. And you can get a glimpse of how the future of, like, potentially mass incarceration, the whole prison industrial complex, will take shape or change, but you're not getting any response. You're not able to be effective at getting in on the ground floor and making a difference. That's, folks, is where I find myself today. Today's podcast is on autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars, and the future of pretextual crime stops for people of color. First off, welcome back to the podcast. It has been a minute since I've been able to podcast, as my one-shot podcasts now are empty. This is the first one that I'm doing. I know that the Hero podcast is posting this week, so this might take a week or two to get to you, but I am sincerely hoping that you are enjoying that podcast on how to enhance your heroic response. And I am very excited to get into today's topic because I don't know that someone has gotten into this thinking yet. And I think this will be the first published content on this idea because I am an interesting person and I think about weird and different things. So I think I might be one of the first people to this party, and I'm kind of excited about that being the case. So yesterday I was also talking with my partner, and since the voicemail line is a little quiet right now on the podcast, she was telling me so far she's kind of more appreciating the one take topics. Where there's a deep dive. I do have about three more interviews ready to go. And honestly, if I'm going to be very clear and open and honest with everything, the interviews are so much easier to do just because it's me and this person and we're reacting and we're doing stuff. And the last podcast with me and Eric Tanchez, the director of Anytown, went really well. And I was really proud of that. So I do need to take some time to withdraw and find some deep dive content and get into that ahead of time so I can make more quality content. Her opinion was that it was a little bit easier to hold focus, and she feels like she gets better quality reflection from the one-off single-topic podcasts. So what I'm curious is this the case? Remember, you have the availability to email me at inclusiveactivism@cox.net, or you can leave a voicemail at the hotline at 860-576-9393. I would love to hear your thoughts. I know you might be like, I don't want to call that line. Like, it's just me talking to the voicemail line. And like, will it even get posted? And it takes forever to get posted. So it does take forever to get posted. That's true. That is completely honest. But at the same point in time, I want to get good at that. And so I need some voicemails. I'm going to have to like start hounding my students to like, give them an accountability test to leave me a voicemail because I need practice on this voicemail like response talk thing. So also, this is really important. Please remember to rate and review us on iTunes, rate and review us on Stitcher. Make sure that you share the podcast on social media if you thought it was something that's interesting, or if I post it, or if you're part of the Inclusive Activism page, you can share that too. This makes a huge difference for us. All these things go a long way to make a significant difference for us here at the Inclusive Activism Podcast. Please remember to subscribe as well. Make sure that you're subscribing to your podcasts on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google Play, on your pod server of choice, Pocket Casts. These are great ways for me to show proof of work to potential sponsors, and it would go a long way into getting my producer, Sarah, paid for her work on this podcast as well. So please remember, your support, all the things that you can potentially do to help the podcast are huge, and I need your assistance. So please help me I don't ask for a lot of help. I don't tend to need a lot of help, but I definitely need help in this area. So with that, today is the day after the really horrible events happened in Charlottesville, North Carolina, where the counter protesters got ran over by the person in the Hellcat car. And frankly, it's sad, but I think these things are going to continue to happen. A big part of the reason why I do this podcast is because events and things like this are happening. They're happening regularly. I want to be a voice where we can talk about some of that stuff. So tonight, I know that there's a lot of vigils that are going to be held showing that racism is not okay. I know there's going to be a lot of conversations about how you can't be a Nazi and American at the same time. Someone's posted that on social media, and I agree. I mean, I think like you either were on the American side or on the Nazi side, and you can't really do both here in America specifically. I thought that had kind of been hashed out in World War II, but it's sad to see that it is part of our everyday discourse, that this is something that we're fighting with, that overt white supremacists are trying to bring an agenda to the table, and the vast majority of moderates are kind of sitting there not really doing anything. So the Inclusive Activism Podcast is kind of your way to get plugged into this stuff, to think about these things, to have conversations about this stuff, so you can be part of the solution. Because as inaction is your support for something going on. Yeah, you're not giving money to it, or yeah, you're not showing up to it, but you're allowing it to exist within your presence. And that passive allowance is complicity. So you have to understand that your voice needs to be risen. You need to be part of this conversation. So I know there's some vigils tonight in two different locations here in Phoenix, but you don't have to be at a vigil. Go and gather three or four people wherever you're at and get a candle and take a moment of silence and deepen your solidarity to make sure that the world knows that we is better than me, and that we don't condone racism. We don't condone classism. We don't condone sexism. You know, us together is better than us apart. And you showing up and being there in some way, shape, or form makes a difference. Your voice matters. And whatever you do makes a difference. So please be part of that. So for me, I need to check in on my activism. My activism has been really good. I just got done spending a full week at Anytown. It was a great experience. For those of you who have not experienced Anytown, it is a week-long deep dive into ism, understanding the repercussions of ism, the things that kind of keep us apart. I was able to facilitate two different pieces. I did the empowerment section, which was really great. And I also did gender night, which was a lot of fun too. I was part of this thing called the Brotherhood, where guys kind of get in a circle and you go into the circle and you kind of speak to how negative masculinity or a man has hurt you or threatened you with violence, and how that shaped you to be like a bad man or like a man that does that to others. And it's kind of like this confessional, and then all the men around you come and touch and support you. And it happened in the middle of this amazing thunderstorm. I mean, there was lightning bolts crashing everywhere. The wind was so loud you couldn't even hear people talking. The thunderbolts were clashing around us because we're already at an 8,000 foot mountain. You know, we're a mile up there, and you know, we are in the heart of the storm. And seeing people just get this off their hearts and watching men just support each other and be part of that experience was unbelievable. And that was just one activity. And I don't share that because I was some amazing facilitator. I shared it because I was part of something that was bigger than myself. In that moment, I knew that it wasn't me, that it was something that was bigger than me, and it was working through me in that moment. And I really just appreciate being of service in those ways. And so Anytown, a wonderful experience. I know we just got done with that series with Eric Tanchez, the executive director of Anytown. And so an unbelievable experience. If you want to learn more about that organization, go to www.anytownleadershipcamp.org. Donate, help, send your kid there. It's a great experience, and it's a great way for your kid to get a jump start on what a global society looks like. I was also part of a Maricopa County Sheriff Officer Task Force meeting at the Center for Neighborhood Leadership, where we were talking about what it's been like since Sheriff Joe Arpaio has left the Phoenix area, which was great. But we're not seeing, I guess, the change we were hoping for with the new sheriff in Pinzone. They're still allowing ICE into the jail to deport people. And that's not what they're getting pulled over for or arrested for. And again, they're getting deported without any due process. Just because you'd arrested something doesn't mean you're guilty or innocent of something. It just means you're arrested. That's something in America that was a very blurry line. And I really wish we could delineate the difference between the two of those things. Like, one is just, you know, there's enough circumstantial evidence to arrest you. But then the other is, are you guilty in front of a jury of your peers? So the Center for Neighborhood Leadership is a wonderful organization. I know VD down there does a lot of work with a lot of folks. And I got to see some Anytown kids there, which was amazing. So if you'd like to learn more about that organization, you can go to azcnl.org and you can do donations. You can kind of go to their calendar and see what's going on and be part of those things. And lastly, I also got to do some service at the Andre House. They are in huge need of helping people Monday through Thursday nights. It's from about 3 o'clock to, I want to say 7 p.m. And they get you out right on time. It is good stuff. You get to help people that are getting maybe one meal a day. You're part of a solution to a problem, a huge need that's happening in that moment. But then you're also seeing that you are someone that can make a difference. And so I think it's something that everybody needs to do, is get outside of themselves a little bit, help somebody that needs some assistance. And if you're interested in that, you can go to andrehouse.org/volunteer-information/. And that is where you can get signed up and do that stuff. And then just get plugged into something good. Make your heart a little bit happy and make a difference in the world. Checking in also on my self-care. I am back from vacation, so it is good to be back into the routine. Vacation is awesome, but the solace of being in routine makes a huge difference for me, so I really, really appreciate that as well. Also, I've had a wonderful thing happen in my life, and I have found a lifting partner. And so lifting is not only better, it's much more amazing, and it's been of exponential benefit. I'm getting many times the return on my investment from that type of thing, and so I'm really happy with my lifting. But that has also come at the cost of really good cardio. So I've only been getting in one solid day of hard cardio. That's my ab day. So I really need to find a way to enhance that or do that a little bit more. Also checking in on my activism. I also am part of Valley Leadership Advance, and I got to go and be part of that this Saturday. And so that was my orientation. Got to meet some amazing folks from many different organizations in the Valley. I got to meet someone that works at the Virginia P. Piper Institute, which is really cool because I only really hear about that place on NPR. So I'm really excited about the opportunity. I know I'm going to get to do some service and make a difference for the community with that group. And so I'm really looking forward to that as well. Checking back in on my self-care, I've gotten in at least 3 good days of meditation, but now I know I'm getting 5 full solid swings at that meditation, that mindfulness, that grounding of where am I and what's going on and what's really important in the world. So I'm appreciating that too. But I am also in need of help too, folks. Both personally and professionally, I'm in a space where things are hard. There's some stuff going on with my family that's difficult, and there's stuff that's of challenge to me professionally. There's some great potential opportunities that might happen to me professionally. So I could really use your positive thoughts, your prayers, and kind of keep me at the center of your thoughts, because I'm in a place of struggle, and I think we all need to be a little bit more open about sharing what's happening to us and that life is difficult. Just this weekend with all the things that happened with Charlottesville has been hard enough, but with that, there's been a lot of things that either could go really great or really bad. And I think that goodness that's placed out in the universe makes a big difference. And so I need your help with that. So with that, I want to get back into the podcast for today, because there is a lot to talk about. And that is the future, right? The future of autonomous vehicles, self-driving cars, and the future of pretextual crime stops for people of color. Now, first off, we know that Rowdy loves diversity. That's well known. This is a fact. But what is not well known is the fact that I kind of like the idea of future tech and how our lives are going to change when new technologies become available. So let me tell you some thoughts that I've had first about simply autonomous self-driving vehicles. So first, the future, in my estimation, with this new technology looks great. I mean, the world's going to change in a lot of ways. It's going to hurt some people and it's going to help some people. But I love the idea of looking at myself through a critical lens. And looking at myself through a critical lens, I know I'm not the best driver. I'm probably, honestly, below average. I get distracted easily. My focus tends to suffer when I'm driving and when I'm in conversation with someone else. Also, I want to do several things at the same time while I'm driving. Like, just driving is not enough for me. Like you, probably, I want to like get a text shot out at the stoplight or check my emails at the stoplight and try to be doing that and driving at the same time. And I know that's a bad idea. I know that's horrible. But I'm being honest, it's something I do. I think most drivers at times are bad drivers. And I know when I'm distracted, I am definitely a bad driver. I think the idea of having a car that is constantly looking everywhere in every direction with cameras or radar, right? Because I mean, we don't have radar as people. Like, we only have our eyes. Like, at best, I know I can check my mirrors. And I think I do a pretty good job about being aware or checking my mirrors and knowing what's around me because I am a motorcycle rider. But I also know that I don't check my mirrors enough. And I know it's virtually impossible to check mirrors the way a camera can do it or the way that radar can detect. So as vigilant as I can be, I know I am less than the machine in that area. I try to be constantly and looking and understanding, and especially when you ride a motorcycle, you have to be thinking like everyone's trying to kill me almost. But I have to own the fact that I'm not the best driver, and I think this technology can help me. The constantly looking and responding to the cameras that the computer can do, the radar, it will mean that the main goal of the car is getting me and the car to the destination safely, not just for myself, but for all other drivers on the road. And really, if I'm going to be honest, my honest goal is getting done driving as quickly as possible. I don't like driving. I don't enjoy it at all, and I'm not a big fan of it. I'd rather be at my location. If I could teleport, I would definitely do that. And in the future, there are going to be more and more and more autonomous self-driving cars on the road. And many, many things are going to change because of that. One of the first things is, what will be insured? Will it be you? Or will it be your car? Or will it be the computer? Will there be a need for car insurance at all? Also, will there be traffic? Since all cars are going to be networked with one another, they're going to be able to monitor the speed and flow of traffic, which means you're not going to get someone cutting you off or trying to like sprint ahead to get two cars ahead. Rather, it's going to be more concerned with the idea that everybody gets there as safely as possible and we're all moving, right? So I would rather be moving in traffic at like 45 miles an hour than I would be to be just moving in traffic 55, but then ground to a stop specifically. Also, it's going to make a big difference because cutting off, merging, rerouting in case of accidents are all going to get done by a computer, which knows what's happening 10 miles down the road. Also in the future, driving yourself will only be done by the rich. So you driving your car all by yourself will only be done by people who have enough money to be able to afford the very expensive insurance, because we don't drive for safety. We drive for pleasure. We drive for escape. We drive for transportation. There's a lot of different reasons, but we don't drive to make sure that we get there safely, to get everyone else there safely. We don't drive with the same intent as the computer does. The only thing that I don't know what's going to happen with the insurance thing is the fact that there's still going to be motorcycles. Motorcycles won't be self-driving. They could be self-driving, but that's going to take much, much longer than cars. And motorcyclists are a very, very powerful lobby. The reason that you know they're a powerful lobby is because most states have the ability to not wear a helmet and ride a motorcycle, and that is because motorcycle insurance companies are lobby local legislators, so they are able to get what they're looking for. But in the very near future, they are going to be the only real variable on the road. And I also think that cars are going to be very careful around motorcyclists specifically, which as a motorcyclist is going to be awesome. Here's another thing that's going to change though. RVs might be a very attractive way of getting across the country, because basically it's going to be what a train used to be. So it might be the new way of transport for the very, very wealthy specifically, because you can just sleep or hang out or watch TV or do work while your RV autonomously drives you down the road to your location, pulls you into the campsite, backs you in, which backing in those huge RV vehicles is a real pain. But I think you'll see more and more people move towards using autonomous RVs to see the country, which I think will be interesting. But that's going to also mean that over-the-road truckers are very, very soon going to be a thing of the past. So expect some more taking our jobs rhetoric from poor white folks, as they are the highest demographic in this job area. But for some reason, they don't seem to notice that it's rich folks maximizing profits, and they are the source of this problem and not poorer immigrants. So yeah, over-the-road truckers won't be on the road, and it will make more sense to have the computer do it because the computer doesn't need to rest. The computer doesn't make mistakes. The computer can drive the whole time, and it will get there safe, fast, and efficiently. And given the fact that it's on the road longer, means it will make up for any skill that is able to done by a truck driver specifically. The computer, even though it goes slower, will go longer. But it will also mean that gas station attendants or charging station attendant jobs might become a thing again, but only briefly. It will only be until this process gets automated somehow, right? So eventually we're going to see a space where you pull in and it, be it gas or be it charging, there will be some type of robot arm that goes right into your gas tank or charging port, and it will plug that in for you, and then it will charge your car. Also, very soon, there will be no more valet parking, which I am really excited about. I hate valet parking. I like the idea that I can park my own car, but you'll never need valet parking because your car will park itself. So the other thing that's interesting is, like, you might not even need your car to park. You may choose to put your car out on the stroll, so to speak, and so make it an Uber or make it a Lyft vehicle, and it would be able to pick up folks and take them to destinations and make money for you while you're, say, at the movies. So again, right, that valet thing is definitely not going to happen. So do expect in the future that insurance, passenger safety, and fewer accidents are going to be immediate outcomes as more and more autonomous self-driving vehicles are on the road. In the podcast notes, I put some footage of self-driving cars in action with Tesla cars responding to unexpected mishaps on the road. So I put two different YouTube videos on there. So check those out. It's really interesting to see how the cars react. It's amazing because I didn't even think. I grew up in more rural areas, so looking out for deer as I was driving on the road is something that I just was used to as I grew up. But with the advent of radar, the cars are never going to hit these deer because radar will detect these deer, because radar works in all different directions at all times. So there's going to be a lot more deer on the road and a lot less accidents because of deer. Interesting stuff, right? So clearly this is going to create a huge economic shift. And one of those shifts that I'm going to analyze here in deep detail. But before I do that, I need to talk about the other piece of this idea and dive into that a little bit more fully. So the second part of this podcast is going to look at the idea of pretextual crime stops, the prison industrial complex, and how people of obvious color are targeted by crime. So first, let's define pretext. In U.S. law, pretext usually describes false reasons that hide the true intentions or motivation for a legal action. A pretextual arrest by law enforcement officers is carried out for illegal purposes, such as to conduct unjustified search and seizure of one's vehicle, right? So currently, here's how policing works. Historical crime data is used to target crime for policing. So this means when police look for crime, they go to a place where they expect to find it. That means it can become a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you look for drugs and you only count the number of times you find the drugs rather than count the number of times that you look, you only count hits rather than misses. And the more hits you have, regardless of the number of swings you take, if hits are all you're looking for, then you're going to always find crime in the place that you look for it. That will be the only place that you look for that stuff because you're only counting hits. But in other neighborhoods, there's going to be less swings, so there'll be less hits. And we actually know from the data that it's actually upper class neighborhoods that tend to have more drug use in them, where lower class neighborhoods tend to get more stops, searches, frisks happening. But if looks don't count and fines are the only measure of success, then those attempts at looks are going to happen in specific areas and they're going to find the crime it expects. So do you see how it has this confirmation bias built into the way that it works? And we're only working in a world where we're looking for drugs in a specific area. We find the drugs because we don't count the looks. We only count the fines. And they're not looking in other areas, so there's less chance for those fines specifically. I hope that makes sense. For example, I looked at myself and I tried to think about how many times I was pulled over in my middle class neighborhood. And I was pulled over in the last year one time. Philando Castile was pulled over 49 times in 13 years. That is 3.75 times a year. Many years, I don't get pulled over at all. 49 times in a lifetime. And if I were to guess, you know, I am a minority, but I am a minority that passes as white. But if I had to think about how many times I'd been pulled over in my life, I would say 10 is pretty like good or high estimate. And I've been driving for 46 years. That's double the amount of time. And so if you look at how many times I've been pulled over a year, it's been 0.38 times. And I am speeding, right? So not only am I doing stuff that I should get pulled over for, I'm getting pulled over way less because I pass and it makes a difference. And he eventually got pulled over enough times that his life was taken and he was killed. And that perception of threat is much different for him than it was for me because of the fact that I pass. So that's kind of how search works. Now let's kind of look at another part of how police forces get money. So there's certain neighborhoods or certain towns, you know, are like speed traps, right? They need their neighborhood to create a certain amount of money to reinvest back into the city, most likely also reinvest back into the police force specifically with that revenue, right? So we know certain neighborhoods rely on a certain amount of money coming in from traffic stops to help support both their city and or police departments. Now, in the future, there is going to be no reason to give an autonomous self-driving vehicle a ticket. It will not speed. It will not run red lights. It will not perform illegal lane changes. It can't. It is programmed not to. So what will happen to all that revenue that's being lost? As it stands right now, many pretextual stops are made for minor traffic violations, with the final purpose of that stop being for drug search and seizure. These will be for things like speeding, failure to fully stop, illegal lane changes, or a tail light out. Many, many different reasons. But in the near future, the car just won't do those things. And at first, the officers are going to pull over people in those self-driving cars. But over and over again, they're going to have egg on their face because they can't ticket a car for doing something they believe they're seeing because the car is simply programmed not to. So what will happen? Well, what's going to happen is it's going to happen anyway. Even with the onset of autonomous self-driving vehicles, these stops are still going to occur. And there's already a variety of excuses that can currently be used. The first is going to be the driver fits the description. This is already happening. No matter how vague the match is, the officer still gets to the nod legally in regards of justification of whether a potential suspects meet the description of a reported crime. There are many times that the only thing an officer really has is the idea of a person's somewhat weight, somewhat height, presented gender and race. That's what they have to go on. So they'll look for what this thing they expect to see. They could be in a place where they're pulling over people who might even be the wrong race, but because they haven't had a lot of experience of different people from different races, they might just see someone as brown, right? So they'll see this brown guy and pull him over thinking he's Hispanic, but he turns out to be Indian, like, you know, from India. So he doesn't fit the description, and they find out as soon as they pull over, but they don't just say, oh, hey, I thought you looked like a suspect we were looking for and let him over. They kind of proceed with this song and dance of you did something wrong and this is why I pulled you over, because otherwise they have to explain the hassle of pulling someone over for no good reason. And again, they're going to keep targeting people of color in ways that white folks who are just riding down the road currently don't experience. And because it happens in one place and doesn't happen in another, we're going to still have these experiences that need justification because one group experiences it and another group doesn't. Now, this is further complicated by the fact that people get calls from racist scared people about random people of color just going about their day-to-day business. So I heard this one story about this brother that was working for Safelite, and he was replacing a window in the front yard of a car, so he's in the driveway doing this work, with already having the approval of the owner who's in the house. So the guy is in a Safelite shirt, arriving in a Safelite car, and is doing the Safelite job, and he has this reported to the police, and the police have to go and find the guy doing his job, doing absolutely nothing wrong, but because people are already have this inherent bias within them, they're reporting crimes that aren't crimes. They're just see some black guy, right? So this happens again, right, in another situation. Another person's working for a power company, right? He's doing the same type of thing. He's going, doing a meter reading, right? He has a power company truck, a power company shirt, and doing a routine meter reading. Again, this guy gets the cops called on him. They arrive with guns drawn, and the guy's just trying to do his job. These reports have the ability to get people killed if something just slightly goes wrong situationally. And these things are not happening to white folks. People aren't like, hey, there's a suspicious white guy in an APS shirt hanging around. You know, there's not reports of a suspicious white guy replacing windshields in someone's front yard. This is only situationally happening to people of color. Now, second, I think the next method that they're going to use for pretextual crime stops will be license plates from another state. Now, there's a variety of reasons that are already currently used for this, right? There's the suspicion of drug trafficking or gun running, many different things. So looking at this reason, this will still be a reason to pull over cars pretextually, even though this is a dumb way to do this crime. So in the future, a smart way to run drugs or to run guns is to just have the car do it by itself without anybody in it, because you can't pull that car over for any reason because it's just doing its business. There's no reason to pull over a self-driving car, and it can have tons and tons of drugs or guns in it. And it's funny, they'll still pull over the person of color because this is the thing that they've been primed over and over and over to do. So what is fascinating to me is I know that this is going to happen. I don't know how they're going to do it in different ways, though, in the future. I don't know how this is going to manifest in a bigger way over and over again. The unknown part of this has the opportunity of being studied right now. And so I have reached out personally in Phoenix to get a hold of Waymo. That's the autonomous vehicle area of Google specifically. And they have started to offer free rides to passengers on an experimental basis with their fleet of Lexus RX250H or their Chrysler Pacifica hybrid minivans. And they're reaching out and they're trying to have folks try this process out. So I've reached out to Waymo several times and I've asked if I can conduct a study to see if in fact these self-driving vehicles with passengers who are obvious people of color get pulled over more often or not. And so I've sent one email. And with that, they said, hey, thanks for your email. We'll forward it on to see if someone's interested. So then I tried again, and I tried to be a little bit more articulate to really tell them what I'm hoping to do. So let me pull up the email so I can tell you what they told me. So Waymo said to me, hi, my name is Blank, a team member here at Waymo. I really appreciate you taking the time to share your thoughts. Our team's mission is to improve lives, right? The thing I'm worried about, by transforming mobility. And part of transforming mobility is providing accessibility for all. At this time, all of our focus is on developing technology, which we are determined to make a reality. Though, I can pass on your suggestion to the team, and they will reach out if they are able to assist you when the time is right. Feel free to stay up to date with our progress by following our blog and the latest news. Have a wonderful day. So needless to say, I'm pretty disappointed by that response because they don't need to do anything. I just needed to have a sense of, I would even be willing to do this on my own. I would be willing to take rides, be in one car that's used to give rides to people of color specifically, and I'd be willing to do all the work, but they don't, there's no phone number to call. There's no person to get a hold of. You can only get a hold of everybody through a Google form. And that's the really, really difficult part of things, is they can kind of just put me off because I'm not powerful enough to have to talk to. And in my opinion, this is very, very short-sighted, even on the part of Waymo specifically. If you go to Waymo's site, all you see are really white people, mostly white people. I think there is a few token mixed people and other very light-skinned minorities like Latinx folks or Asians, but they're marketing their whole product around whiteness. And given Google's current problems with diversity, there's little shock that they're going to have whiteness problems at Google. If they can't even do gender right, then their issues with whiteness must be damn near ubiquitous. But they have an opportunity here, and they're just missing it because they won't listen. They have an opportunity to build a strong, loyal customer base, long known for their dedication to brands who are willing to show they understand the needs and wants of that customer base. GM hired tons of blacks in Ohio, Michigan, etc. once they fled the Jim Crow South. They then became a large, loyal customer base because they wanted to support the company that supported them. So if you see in black community, you're going to see GM everywhere. Chevys specifically, Cadillacs, but tons and tons of GM cars are normally bought by the black community specifically. And you see that even outside of the areas where the plants are, because word spreads about people trying to help this community, and they're very, very loyal to people helping them. There's also in this community a huge, huge high need for safe transportation, given this sheer number of interactions forced on people of color by law enforcement. So they're not really seeing the opportunity to match need with opportunity at all. Because given the sheer numbers of interactions people of color are having on a day-to-day basis with law enforcement, there's a huge need to have transportation and know you're going to get somewhere safely. And safely is not the car accident. Safely is not pulled over needlessly by a police officer. Because the reality is they're dealing with this stuff and it's really difficult and bad. You know, drug paraphernalia includes straws, and you can get arrested for drug paraphernalia? These are things that people of color are dealing with on a day-to-day basis. And it's so frustrating to see such a forward-thinking idea and notion miss such a huge need. Waymo needs people to try out their ride service. People of color in economically distressed communities need safe transportation where they're not subject to traffic stops, which are just the order of the day. They need riders, Waymo. They need dedicated drivers who need the vehicles to work perfectly and to obey all the traffic laws. See, this just makes too much sense. But we're stuck in this place where this company is just defaulting to whiteness, even though they're in a space around people who need this consistency that they're hoping to offer to everyone, to them specifically. If you can't tell, this is really difficult for me, and it stresses me out to the nth degree. But it's going to happen. People in cars built to obey all laws, all traffic laws perfectly, are still going to get pulled over for suspicion of wrongdoing. And somehow, in the future, there is still going to be no outrage. This will just be an accepted given. But we have the opportunity to do something about this now, before these systems are put in place. And that is where I need your help, listeners, because this is a bigger issue than me. I might have had the thought first, but together we have the power to put pressure on the organizations, right? So Uber does this. Waymo does this. Tesla is going to be rolling out a bunch of self-driving cars in the very near future. These companies need to be paired with these people who have needs that could save their damn lives. And we need to do something about this and take action with it. So as soon as I post this podcast, I'm going to try to get this looked at by someone at Huffington Post. But the more and more listens that this gets, the more and more of an issue I hope this raises. And this is where I need the community's help too. And this ain't about me, it ain't about the podcast. Like, I think I have an idea that might save a few people's lives, but we need to get on the cutting edge of this. And I need a collective voice raised around this issue with me to help me with this thing. So in review, the three major points of this podcast were: self-driving cars are going to dramatically change the world. The second is that pretextual stops are part of the day-to-day life of people of color. And third, as it stands right now, there is an opportunity to make this far more safe, far more life-saving for people of color if they're able to use these self-driving cars, and knowing's allowing for that opportunity to happen. So, if this made you think of something, if you want to have a conversation about self-driving cars and pretextual crime stops, if you have a question about this, if you have an idea, if in this conversation that I'm having with you, you have an idea that will further help me articulate the ideas of this, please call me, email me, help me. If you want to email me, the email address is inclusiveactivism@cox.net. That's inclusiveactivism@cox.net. You can also call me and leave a voicemail at 860-576-9393. That is the Inclusive Activism Hotline at 860-576-9393. That is the place to ask me questions, give me different scenarios, ask about how we can react to this in the first time. But give me your responses and have a conversation with me, because I need some help with this, because I think I'm on to something. And it's not about that I'm on to something. It's just there's something that could help someone. So help me. And remember, if you're interested in helping this organization, please rate and review us on iTunes. Please share this podcast with as many different people as you possibly can. You can learn more about me and this organization at www.inclusiveactivism.com. And I am Rowdy here, your host at the Inclusive Activism Podcast. And I'm humbly asking for your help and support, because I think I'm onto something and I think it could help people. And I need your help doing so. Share the podcast, rate the podcast, subscribe to the podcast, email me, email Waymo, email Tesla, email Uber, and let's make a difference for people just trying to live their lives. Thank you. We'll be right back.